Welcome to the DLF Dynasty Podcast with your hosts, Dan Myler, Ryan McDowell, and Matt Price.
Yeah, we are the DLF Dynasty Podcast. I'm Dan, that's Matt. Over there is Ryan, and we are coming at you with episode 614 of the show. Lots to get to this week, including four more 2024 rookies to talk about in the rookie report. Can't believe the draft is just a few weeks away. The three of us, Matt, Ryan, and myself, will be hanging out with a couple other DLF fellas watching the draft. We also got to look over some new ADP that hit DLF here in the past week. That'll be a fun conversation. Try to identify some overvalued and undervalued players potentially, and we got a big startup to get to. But first, the guys. Ryan, I don't like it when you miss shows, Ryan. It's not good.
No, I don't like it either. But it was a good week away. A little spring break vacation. Missed you guys. Glad to be back. And yeah, I echo what you said, Dan. Can't believe we're a little over 3 weeks away from the draft. I think. Yeah, I'm ready for it.
I'm ready for it, too. We all are. I mentioned we're all getting together to hang out. It's become a tradition now the last few years and a lot of fun. I mentioned that I don't like it when you miss shows. You said it was relaxing. You said you took the week off, but I disagree because I'm in leagues with you and you were running auctions and we had lots of things going on. So certainly wasn't a fantasy vacation for you, buddy.
No, we still had some dynasty work going on. That never stops.
How about you, Matt? I know you're recovering in your personal life. In fantasy, though, you got to be looking forward to what's upcoming, huh?
I am, man. What's on my mind lately is I have exactly, I think, one 101. I might have a second one somewhere, but I have one 101, and I just want to move back because, I mean, we're going to find out today, later today, people hate Jaden Daniels for some reason. I want to take him. I want to move back to 2 or 3, and nobody wants to give anything on top to move up to the 101. So it's very frustrating. The best offer I've gotten so far is a 2025 second plus the 103, I think, for the 101. Come on, guys. Do better.
Yeah, that's not good enough to move off that first pick. It is kind of a weird situation this year because it does feel like there is a lot of hesitation at the top of drafts. And typically when we talk about a, you know, franchise quarterback like Caleb Williams is considered to be, Matt, people are eager to move up those one or two spots to make that pick. And I think there's some trepidation out there in the dynasty world when it comes to Williams.
Yeah, is this like the thing that we do every year when we have these top prospects and by, you know, 2 weeks before the draft and we've picked them apart so much that we're just bored of the top prospect that we're finding any excuse to, bump them down a peg? That kind of feels like what we're doing right now with Caleb Williams a little bit and Jaden Daniels, to be honest with you.
It might actually be just that the top is so loaded and there's so many good players that people don't want to pay a premium to play the number one guy or pick the number one guy. Sure. Ryan, what are you seeing out there when it comes to the top of these drafts and how people are either moving around or not moving around? Is it just too early?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously still early. I did see a couple of actual rookie drafts getting started over the past few days. Our buddy Curtis Patrick from RotoViz, I know he was tweeting about a league that he's in that they're doing their rookie draft already. That's a normal thing in that specific league. So, but for most of us, obviously still very early. I think what's really happening is all in all, we're just realizing how good this class is because you have guys like Caleb Williams and Marvin Harrison Jr. who are both, you know, that generational word has been thrown around with both of those guys. But then you look at the players behind them and you start wondering, is Jaden Daniels or Drake May really that far behind Caleb Williams? Is Malik Nabers or Roma Dunze really that far behind Harrison? And then you have the occasional take, whether it's dynasty related or NFL draft, that some of those guys are, are actually preferred to the studs, I guess you could.
So I think all in all, we're just realizing we've got we've got six guys, and then you throw Bowers into the mix as well. We've got six or seven guys who are just making this a potentially huge class for dynasty purposes.
Yeah, and so many intriguing decisions at the top of the draft. There, we're not even decided on how this is going to shake out. The biggest puzzle piece still has to be found and put into place, and that is the NFL draft with landing spots and draft capital, which again, we're only a few weeks away from knowing. In the meanwhile, though, there has been some big news in the NFL, so we should get to that.
The startup.
And I think everybody that listens to the show regularly knows we like to talk about the biggest news in the NFL and how it pertains to Dynasty. Everybody knows what the biggest news was this week. It was that Stephon Diggs trade, sending Diggs along with a 2024 sixth rounder and a 2025 fifth rounder to Houston for Minnesota's 2025 second round pick, which I think most out there would say is equal to a late first round pick. I don't think there's a lot of people out there that are expecting Minnesota to be really good in 2024. I think that's a pretty good get for the Bills, actually, in my opinion. When I saw this trade come down, actually, when I saw the initial trade that Houston did with Minnesota to get that pick from the Vikings, I thought, man, that was a good move to move down whatever it was, 16, 19 picks and get that 2025 second. That could be a top 40 pick in next year's draft. Now Diggs is on his way to join C.J. Stroud and Nico Collins, Tank Dell, Dalton Schultz, and the rest of that offense in Houston. That coaching staff has put all, or that front office at least, has put all the pieces in place, Ryan, for C.J. Stroud to be successful, right? We saw what Philadelphia did a couple years ago, adding A.J. Brown. I think that's what Houston had in mind here. Let's get an elite alpha receiver to go with these young guys that we have already in place for our young quarterback so he can take the next step after his rookie of the year campaign last year.
Yeah, I think ultimately it was probably a good move for Houston, but just the fact that that would even be questioned probably shows how quickly and honestly how greatly Stephon Diggs declined towards the end of the season. We've seen his dynasty value dip just as fast over the past several months. So, you know, I was kind of excited to see what Houston did with the young guys. Obviously the trio of Stroud, Dell and Collins, and, you know, it kind of feels like Stephon Diggs is crashing the party a little bit. So, you know, it's always fun to see a big NFL trade, but ultimately I didn't love this one for the Texans.
You didn't love it for your dynasty teams that have Tank Dell and Nico Collins. I like it for those CJ Stroud shares, though. Another weapon for him can't hurt.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's got to be viewed as Stroud has to be the biggest winner of this move, I would think. I don't think personally, selfishly, I don't think I have Tank Dell or Nico Collins on any dynasty teams. I wish I did even now. And maybe this is the chance to go out and try to get some of those guys on my teams.
Yeah, it's probably not a discount, but one of those things where we talk about regularly that maybe one of those guys are available today and they weren't a week ago before Stephon Diggs got there. Matt, you're our resident Tank Dell lover. You have supported him since way before he landed in Houston in the draft a year ago. He's the guy that I saw the most questions about on social media after the Diggs trade, that maybe this shows that the team doesn't want him in that alpha role, in that number one role, double-digit targets every single week because of his injuries as a rookie. I saw some people mentioning that. I saw some people obviously mentioning his size or lack thereof, that he can't take on that kind of beating, that kind of workload in the NFL. Does this affect Stephon Diggs landing in Houston? Does that affect Tank Dell at all for you?
I don't think so. I mean, Stephon Diggs, is he going to be 31 this year? I think this is, yep. I think this is a kind of a 1 year kind of, maybe 2 year kind of rental. Nico Collins was seventh in fantasy points per game last year. Tank Dell was 12th in points per game last year. And both of them actually played in the slot less than Stephon Diggs last season, not a significant margin. Diggs was in there 35.7% of the time. Collins was 20% of the time, Dell about 28% of the time. So, you know, I think they're going to move all three of these guys around the formation. I think people, a lot of the like, hey, this kills Tank Dell's value is that people just think, oh, Tank Dell's small, he's going to play in the slot. But no, he plays outside most of the time. So if you want to put Stephon Diggs in the slot full time to kind of extend his career, as we oftentimes see with veterans, and leave the two youngsters on the outside, like I love that. I mean, I think it just – is going to be another weapon that the defense has to worry about to give more single coverage to those two outside receivers. So I think you could say this for this season, there maybe we get muted. They're both not going to be top 12 in points per game, the two young guys I'm talking about. But like I can see both of them still finishing as like wide receiver twos. Like they're both in the 12 to 24 range at the end of the season. I don't see that as impossible for them.
Yeah, I mean, I think, well, they played outside more than Diggs because Houston primarily was playing two wide receiver sets. So I'm really interested to see what it looks like now with these three, highly capable receivers. And obviously they get Schultz back. They have improved the offensive line. So maybe that allows them to get all three on the field at the same time, maybe more often than they would have last year, or certainly in previous years. I talked about Diggs, his dynasty value dipping, currently wide receiver 30 in our ADP. That is his lowest positional ADP since September of 2016. So we're talking about years and years that he's been in that top 20, top 25 range, and now down to wide receiver 30. And this is the real reason why. You look back from week 10 on last year, he was the wide receiver 44. In fantasy PPR scoring. So as I said, his value is already dipping. I think this trade helps his value somewhat. Just that fresh start, a really nice quarterback situation, but the uncertainty with the competition with the young guys there.
You mentioned September 2016. That was Diggs' second year in the league. Right before he kind of took the league by storm. And really had that meteoric rise through that second season. You were saying, Matt?
I think Schultz is dead for fantasy. Like he's now a bye week injury option. He's not a starter anymore for fantasy. I think he's the biggest loser from this group. And I guess Noah Brown and Robert Woods, if you want to throw them in there.
Yeah, they weren't fantasy relevant anyway, I wouldn't say. But to your point on Schultz now, barely hanging on to tight end two type status. You want him as your third guy, and he's only going to be productive a few times a year for your fantasy team. And you just got to guess the weeks he scores a touchdown, which could come because who's going to guard Dalton Schultz instead of those three on the outside? How about the situation in Buffalo? We should talk about that quickly. Josh Allen now without a proven NFL wide receiver outside of maybe Curtis Samuel, who we can talk about how proven he is, especially the last few seasons. Meanwhile, Khalil Shakir, Matt, and Dalton Kincaid, they're in line for more targets. I'm wondering, is this a spot, maybe even an ideal spot, for a rookie wide receiver to land? The Bills don't pick till 28th overall. They pick at 60 overall, I think, in the second round. Don't have a third round pick. They have a bunch of needs on the defense, particularly their defensive front. And at safety, after losing both of their starters last season, they also have some holes to fill on the O-line. So the Bills have needs, but there's a legitimate case to be made that their biggest need now is at wide receiver. And one of these guys that are typically mocked at the end of the first round or early second round in the NFL draft could fall right in Buffalo's lap as a potential number one receiver for the Bills.
Yeah, I mean, I think they are a lock at 28 to take whoever falls between like A.D. Mitchell or Xavier Worthy. I don't think Brian Thomas is falling there, but it feels like one of those three are probably there. And if not, then you know, maybe they pass at that point, but those feel like, those three feel like a lock if they were to be there. As far as like the guys that are there already, I mean, I think Curtis Samuels is a really good player. I think he is established. He got put into that like kind of gadgety role when he was in Carolina, but he's been very good for when he's got opportunities in Washington. I think he won a couple of games for both of our squads in Ryan's Death Becomes You League last year for our Vampire teams. He was very good for multiple weeks in a row for that. So, I mean, you're probably not going to want to necessarily start him as a top three wide receiver on your team, but I think he's still going to be flex worthy, upgrade an offensive situation. But no, I think the top target there is going to be either Kincaid or one of these rookies that they're going to bring in.
I'm a little worried about Samuel. I mean, you know, even with this perceived increased opportunity with Diggs gone, you know, Joe Brady's the offensive coordinator there, and Samuel has already played under him. And you talk about that gadgety role. That's what we saw in Carolina when Samuel was playing under Joe Brady. So I'm not necessarily excited about him. I think both of those guys kind of are what they are right now. I saw somebody make this point on Twitter following the trade. I wish I could remember who it was so I could credit them, but I think it's a good one that if you've got that 105 pick in a single quarterback rookie draft, or you have the, I guess the 108, 109 in a super flex, the value of that pick just went up because one of these guys, Mitchell, McConkey, you know, whoever you name some names there, Matt, one of those wide receivers is going to land with Buffalo at 28, and they're going to immediately gain some value as the potential wide receiver one to Josh Allen there.
Yeah, all good points. I think that's the most likely outcome. This draft is full of really good athletes at the wide receiver position, and there are a lot of very smart people out there that are predicting we could see 6, 7, 8 first-round wide receivers. And if that happens and all those guys come off the board before Buffalo ends up on the clock, I wonder what they would do if they'd move off of it. It's unlikely they move up, don't have a third round pick, have a couple of fifths, but they're a team to watch for sure for us as dynasty managers, because we want Josh Allen's number one receiver, and there's no telling if that guy's on the roster right now. He may be in about a month. Before we move on to our ADP segment, let's pause for a word from our sponsor this week.
This week's episode of the podcast is brought to you by the guys over at DraftKings and that newest product that I've been talking about the last few weeks. It's called Pick 6. It's a pick'em style platform where you choose players to have more or less of a certain stat, things like passing yards, rushing yards, etc. But the twist that DK has made is that it's a peer-to-peer platform. So if you're contrarian and you outsmart your opponents, the winnings can be massive. It's also available in 21 states, including some that don't even have sports betting. I live in one of those states that don't allow sports betting, but Pick 6 is available, and I can tell you I already love it, and I think you will too. So sign up using our link in the show notes, and you're going to get a brand new offer as the weather gets warmer and those Pick 6 offers start heating up with it. New customers can get an instant 100% deposit match up to $100 in Pick 6 credits. So check it out. Check out those show notes and sign up today.
You down with ADP? Yeah, you know me.
Yeah, we're always down with ADP, and brand new Superflex Rookie ADP hit the website this week. April Superflex Rookie ADP is on DynastyLeagueFootball.com. Highlights of the ADP include Caleb Williams, picked at number one overall in all 12 mocks, so no surprise there. He's followed by Marvin Harrison Jr. at 2 and Jaden Daniels at 3. Jonathan Brooks is the first running back off the board at the 202. That's 14 overall. You can find the rest of April Superflex ADP, rookie ADP, on DynastyLeagueFootball.com. Just click on rookie ADP under resources. We thought we'd talk about some undervalued or overvalued players this week. Ryan, was there an undervalued or overvalued guy that caught your eye?
Yeah, I want to talk a little bit more about Jaden Daniels. I know there's obviously been a lot of talk about Jaden Daniels, and I know Matt loves him, so anytime I can ruffle his feathers, I want to try to do that. But
how'd that work out with Tate Tell last year, Ryan?
Oh, shots fired.
Yeah, yeah. You know, Tank Dell, I mean, the good thing about Tank Dell is he cost you a third or a fourth round pick last year. So even if you miss,
that's a good point.
Big deal. If you miss with the 102 or 103 with Jaden Daniels, it's going to hurt a lot worse. And I mean, I'm certainly not totally off Jaden Daniels when it comes to Dynasty. I mean, because I mean, if you watched any LSU games this year, you know the upside that's there. But I just feel like for some reason, we're just totally glossing over a lot of red flags, a lot of concerns. And they've been talked about. I mean, I know, Matt, you said earlier, we're starting to pick these guys apart, and we certainly are. But some of it specifically, when it comes to the age, when it comes to injury concerns, these things are worth talking about and worth factoring in when you're trying to decide how to spend a top two or three rookie pick, especially in this loaded class. And, you know, I think Jaden Daniels, as I already said, has a huge upside, probably a higher upside than any quarterback in this class. But I think he has a much lower floor than Caleb Williams or than Drake May. And I'm taking Drake May over Jaden Daniels. So to see Daniels with that QB2 and three overall ADP in our Superflex rookie ADP, it's just a little too high for me. I'm more comfortable with him behind Neighbors, behind Drake May. So we're talking more like five or six for me. So again, when you're talking about a pick that early, it feels like Jaden Daniels is overvalued.
Yeah, I tend to agree, Ryan. I've kind of had a come to Jesus moment on when it comes to Daniels and maybe everything going on there at LSU. Every time we see these elite quarterback options, elite dynasty quarterback options, come out in the same year or at least having played with these elite wide receivers, it makes you think twice, right? Who made who type situation?
Sure.
And as much as I like Jaden Daniels, I look at Malik Neighbors and his teammate Brian Thomas down there at LSU and say, it really does feel like almost any quarterback at LSU could put up really nice numbers and look awfully efficient and awfully good in that offense. Now, they're not every quarterback's going to look as athletic and as like jaw-dropping type play, those kind of jaw-dropping type plays. I got sucked into the Jaden Daniels hype, and I backed off, not only because of what I said about the LSU wide receivers, but also because I took a second look, maybe even a third look at Drake May, and I think we got lulled to sleep, at least I did, as far as, you know, his upside and his potential to be a high-end fantasy quarterback. Talking about May, I really do feel like he put that Tar Heels team on his back at times, and some people see that as a negative. I saw the video that Josh Norris did a week or two ago. You should really find it on Twitter. I found it on Twitter. It's only 10 or 12 minutes long, but they sat down with Drake May and talked about his thoughts at the line of scrimmage, the adjustments that he makes, his ability to move around inside the pocket and make plays with his feet that aren't necessarily those big plays that turn into 20 or 25 yard runs. They're subtle movements that move away from leverage, move away from the blitz, and give him just enough time to deliver down the field and score a long touchdown. Those types of plays are often overseen and maybe overlooked by us as dynasty managers. And while he may not have Michael Vick type elite elusiveness, he's pretty darn athletic himself. So I've actually moved Drake May back above Jaden Daniels as well. I agree with you, Ryan. I would take Neighbors over Jaden Daniels. I've always said that. Obviously, I'd take Marvin Harrison as well. And I just want to pump the brakes a little bit. I agree with you. There's probably the most upside with Jaden Daniels, because if it all clicks, we could get a Michael Vick type experience with Jaden Daniels. But we've seen a lot of these guys with this kind of athleticism that didn't have those red flags, the age, the late breakout, all those types of things, that those guys didn't work out. There's no guarantee here with Jaden Daniels. Matt, I know you're a big fan. We all know you're a big fan. It's the upside that draws you in, right?
listen, I can understand if you want to take Marvin Harrison ahead of him. I can understand if you want to take either of the other two wide receivers, Neighbors or Dunze, because they just feel like they're not going to miss. But to me, like taking Drake May over him is bad. Like, I just don't think that's a good process. But yeah, you want to talk about accuracy? Like, Drake May is 104th out of 125 qualifying quarterbacks on target percentage, dead last among the top 15 prospects in the class. Meanwhile, Jaden Daniels, 64% on target rate on throws 21 or more yards down the field. I mean, not to mention like
easy to be on target fitted when Malik Neighbors is out there jumping over guys to make catches.
Okay. I mean, you got to play with, like, we did this with Joe Burrow.
Incomplete passes off target, Matt.
We did this with Joe Burrow too. And I was maybe part of that because I was somebody who wanted Tua over Joe Burrow at that time, but we did the same thing. Is Joe Burrow really that good? He has this one really good season and all these amazing playmakers. Guess what? He was just really good. So I don't know. I don't want to hold that against them. They're doing what they can with what they have available to them. And he put up an historic season.
For every Joe Burrow there's a Derek Carr though. It was Davante Adams that made him in college. And everybody got into that.
Those players didn't run for 1,200 yards a year. Jay Dales has a 1.6% career turnover worthy play percentage. He doesn't turn the ball over. That's the lowest in the class. I get all the red flags. I do. And I understand it's a complete ceiling pick. And if you don't want to play for ceiling, if you'd rather play for the floor, take one of those other players. That's totally fine because it will hurt a lot if you take Jaden Daniels over Marvin Harrison or Malik Neighbors and those two hit and Jaden Daniels does not hit. That will hurt a lot. So you have to know what you're getting into here. You have to assess your own risk averseness to these players. And if I can't pass that up because we know what happens when we get a quarterback that runs and it all comes together with the passing and the running. And this is going to be James Daniels is going to be the most athletic, one of the most athletic and explosive quarterbacks in the NFL the second he steps on the field. So I don't want to pass on that kind of upside. Like Marvin Harrison is already the wide receiver 6, I believe. He's going in the first round of startup picks, right? Like, where's the value growth on a selection like that? But again, it's just if you want to stay, if you want to take a stab, you know,
it's scoring points sure for you is where it's at. You know, we don't need to turn it into a Drake May versus Jaden Daniels discussion. Jaden Daniels, there are negatives there. If Jaden Daniels ends up in Washington, I don't love that landing spot. If Jaden Daniels lands in New England, I don't love that. Meanwhile, I see the potential for what if the Vikings trade up and get Drake May and he lands in Kevin O'Connell's offense? That is a match made in heaven with the weapons they have in Minnesota and that offense. I could see Drake May being an instant impact, potentially a CJ Stroud type of change. I mentioned the Vikings pick in 2025 potentially being very high. I don't think it's going to be very high if it's Drake May. That seems like a perfect match.
I mean, what if they trade up and take Jaden Daniels? You can say the same thing, right? Or like we can what if forever. And to be clear, I don't want Jaden Daniels if he goes to New England. Like that's, I'm probably going to move him down below all of those players we talked about if that happens, but I don't mind him in Washington at all.
I was going to mention the landing spots as well, because again, we're still super early, but to look at one of those guys, Daniels or May, likely going to Washington and the other one potentially going to New England. It could be as simple as I want the one that's not in New England. Right. Time will tell and they are still close enough. And again, I'm not totally off Daniels. It's not like he's a guy I don't want at all. I just don't want him above Neighbors. And as much as we know right now, I don't want him over Drake May, but that could change with landing spots.
Yeah, landing spots are going to be a big part of this. We have so much still to learn, and we continue to say that, but it's worth mentioning every single time. Matt, how about you? Did you pick a player that's either over or undervalued here?
I did. I picked a running back, which feels weird to say in this class, but this running back ran a 4.46, 97th percentile speed score. He averaged 8.2 yards per touch, which was the most efficient of any running back in college football last year. And we're taking him at the 24th spot of the running back 6 overall. That's Marshawn Lloyd. I feel like he is a mid second round pick. I'd rather have him over Blake Corum. I'd rather have him over Keon Coleman, who's going ahead of him. I think I'm close on Jalen Wright and Braylon Allen. I think you can order those top 5 to 6 running backs any way you like. But for me, I prefer him as the running back 2 or 3 in this class. So, I think this is a bad price a market inefficiency on Marshawn Lloyd.
Did you say you see Marshawn Lloyd as the running back 2 or 3?
I think I have him at 2 right now. Yeah, behind Benson. I think I just don't want to deal with the Jonathan Brooks like injury thing until I know more. So I've put him ahead of Brooks at this point.
I'm a little surprised. I didn't know anybody had Marshawn Lloyd that high. I have him all the way down at 8 and in the middle of the third round. I think he's a similar prospect to Isaac Grendo, who also has big explosion type. Yeah, they're similar players.
Yeah, crazy.
He doesn't have the same kind of vision. He struggles. You know, he struggles with burst and like efficiency at the line of scrimmage. And those are the most important things you're going to see out of a running back. I like his burst when he just gets downhill and goes, but his inability to hit cutback lanes or his ability to run into the back of runners just slows me down on how effective he's going to be at the next level.
Yeah, Matt's been high on Lloyd from the start, if I remember correctly.
Yeah, it was Lloyd and Ray Davis, right?
Yeah. So,
yeah. Two guys.
Yeah. Those are two of the guys.
I have heard others, you know, group Lloyd in that tier with Benson and Brooks and, you know, Corum or whoever else, Wright, Jalen Wright as well. So I think he's in the mix there for a lot of people. And I think we just keep saying draft capital, even more so than landing spot, draft capital is going to tell the story on the running backs.
I think he sneaks into the end of day 2. And if that's the way it happens, then, I mean, he's right there with the 1 or 2 other backs that go in day 2.
Yeah, he has a big injury history. You know, that's also another thing that kind of sticks in my head. But he's a big play waiting to happen. He had plenty of them in college. At South Carolina, he made some plays that were eye opening for sure. I actually think he's the opposite. I think he's a little bit overvalued. Honestly, I wouldn't be
shocked today. I feel like this show is about attacking me today.
I feel like we accomplished our goal, Ryan. We got more rookies to talk about in the rookie report, so let's get to that.
It's time for the rookie report.
It is time for the rookie report. Let's get right to Adonai Mitchell, the Texas standout receiver. Another one of these in a long line of big play receivers, of guys that able to get downfield and make plays. The speed just jumps off the film when you watch him. His RAS score is incredible, and he looks like the type of wide receiver prospect that can maybe shift the field for an NFL team. Matt, I'm wondering if you like him as much as you like some of the other receivers of his stature.
Yeah, the two of the receivers we're talking about today, they're the most difficult evals of all of these prospects for me, to be honest. And Adonai Mitchell is one of those. Like, you can see the talent on the field. He's just this master of disguise when it comes to those outbreaking routes, especially. He gives this like hard stutter step, plants inside or outside, and then just explodes to the opposite direction. And you see that all over the field on film. For Texas, especially at the goal line. He makes it really effective at the goal line. I think that's one of the reasons why he scored so many touchdowns this season. You combine that with the deep speed. He has a 96.2% on-target catch rate and only a 1.8% drop rate. So, like, he does a lot of stuff well, but he's got a lot of warts too, Dan. I'll save those for you till let you talk about his positives, but he's just a really tough player to evaluate because you see everything on the field that you want to see from a wide receiver at times. But there's some warts that we got to talk about too.
Well, we'll get to the warts, and you mentioned him. He's so good around the boundary, around the, on the edge of the field. He's,
He's already good at the two tap, you know, the getting both feet down thing. He's been doing that since his first year at Texas. So I don't know if he got trained that, but a lot of these college prospects that you see get used to that 1 foot thing. We saw George Pickens only get 1 foot in the NFL after making that transition a handful of times. So to see a guy do it earlier, that felt like a good thing to me. He's great at tracking the ball deep. He knows how to use leverage at the top of his routes and create separation, and then also leverage space on the field to bend and route to the inside to leave space on the outside to catch it over his shoulder. Those are all things that we really like. But when you talk about those negatives, Matt, and you know, the first thing that's gonna come to mind has to be the drops, right? He drops passes. He oftentimes tries to body catch the ball rather than use his hands. In fact, when he does try to use his hands, that's when those drops come up. That's going to be something that coaches try to coach out of him. He's not always the most aggressive guy from play to play. He loses some gusto when he doesn't feel like the ball's coming his way. And that could be a problem at the next level. He also struggles at the catch point when he's contested. Actually, it's right before the ball gets there. If there's mm-hmm. somebody in his space in the few strides before the ball gets there, he seems to get flustered and then mistime his jump or not correctly body the defender to create that last moment of separation to get the ball. There's the highlight reel catches, but outside of that, what are you seeing as the negative?
Well, I want to give a couple more credits for pauses because I okay. just want to step back. I don't the drops, like I didn't see that, and the numbers say that he only had one drop total in his final two seasons. So I'll have to go back and watch some more. So I didn't really see necessarily drops, but I did watch.
I should have maybe said double catches. There's yes, double catches in there.
A ton of double catches, like almost
and at the next level. Catch,
but yes,
the next those, level, there's going to be a defender there to knock that out, right?
Absolutely. And I watched Steve Smith's breakdown of him this morning, actually.
I did,
and
too.
He said, Steve Smith called him a 90% body catcher. I don't know if I'd say that. I don't think I saw that. But you do see him let the ball come into his body. And he just is like he just doesn't adjust well to off-target throws. Like if the ball is on him, cool. I'm in. Like if he goes to an accurate quarterback, cool. Let's go to Dallas, go to Dak Prescott, whoever else you want to throw out there as a really accurate quarterback. If he goes to a quarterback that is not accurate, at times Josh Allen still has accuracy problems, you know, if he goes to New York, something like that. So that's the biggest thing, issue that I have with him. But then you have the touchdown rate, 18 touchdowns, 93 catches, a 19% touchdown rate. That is not going to be sustainable. The efficiency numbers, he has a 1.78 yards per team pass attempt. The threshold is for most people is 2.5. So he's below that. He was never an elite target earner. Why was he never an elite target earner if he was this good this year? And to give some context of that yards per team pass attempt number, Neighbors is highest in the class at 3.82, so more than double yikes. What we're talking about with Adonai Mitchell. So there's a lot of things to like, but there's a lot of like, man, I don't really want to spend a first round rookie pick on him, but I think mm-hmm. if we get to the second round, like I'm willing to take a shot on the upside because it's definitely there.
He's so much like Troy Franklin. Like he's yes. they need to be like packaged together side by side because I feel the same about both of them. I could see either one of them being like high-end wide receiver twos for our dynasty roster and making big plays for our teams week in and week out even. But I could also see them kind of fading into the background on an NFL team and never becoming what those that are drafting them at 7 or 8 or 9 overall ever want them to be. So I struggle with them. I struggle with Mitchell just like I do Troy Franklin. Ryan, how about you? What's your gut feeling about Mitchell and where his upside lands for Dynasty Manager?
Yeah, it's not great really when it comes to okay. the gut feel. I mean, I think back to the combine again. I got the chance to go and sit in on the media sessions for these guys, and Mitchell had. Man, he had some memorable quotes. He literally said, now I want to hear what you guys have to say about this when it comes to what you've seen on the film, said he never runs routes full speed which allows him to run routes for the entire drive, essentially saying he's saving himself for the, you know, to be able to play throughout the entire drive. I was just shocked that that actually came out of his mouth in front of a room full of NFL media.
It shows on the film that he's not going full speed all the time. And I always thought it was more like getting down on himself or maybe down on the team for not getting him the ball or the plays not called for him to be that number one target. You can see it. You can see him running three, doing the Randy Moss thing, taking plays off. You can see him taking teams off if you watched enough of him.
And no wide receiver, no player runs every route full speed. I mean, obviously, and that's not even the way all routes are designed, but to say he never runs routes full speed, never. I don't know.
I have to say sometimes after the catch, he looks way faster with the ball in his hands than he ever did before the catch. So it's like he kicks it into gear. So I don't think he's lying. I think there might be a little extra there.
I do wonder if that's part of what, I mean, we've gotten news in past seasons. A Baylor wide receivers stick out to me for some reason, probably more than a decade ago, but like where they've said that coaches tell them, chill on this play. And we've seen that. We saw that with Xavier Worthy too, right? Like he took plays off occasion. So maybe it's just a coaching thing, but it does seem like Adonai takes more time off, I would say. But he turns it on. Five playoff games, five touchdowns. A touchdown in every single playoff game he's ever played in college football. So,
yeah. Well,
maybe he's just one of those players that just wants to turn it on at the right time. I don't know.
Maybe didn't represent himself well in the media portion, but really turned it on once he got on the field at the combine, and I think ultimately was considered a winner coming out of the combine. And you see him, you know, we were talking about the Bills and the Stephon Diggs situation earlier. You see Mitchell routinely mocked to Buffalo with that 28th pick, and looks like you know it's hard to say a guy projected as a late first rounder is a lock, but I mean he shows up in the late first round of mock drafts very often, and obviously Buffalo is down there. Actually, Matt Miller over at ESPN released a 7-round mock a week or two ago, and he had Mitchell going to the Bills as well, and that was pre-Diggs trade, I think.
I continue to battle my rankings and go back and forth with, like I mentioned, Troy Franklin. I certainly want Xavier Worthy over these guys, but I've gotten to the point now where I'm considering Ladd McConkey over these guys.
Yeah.
And that makes, you know, I know that's not very hot take-ish, but I think Ladd McConkey has just as good a chance to be a first round pick and get a nice landing spot. And I kind of like that a little bit better because maybe it's what you said earlier, Matt. I think McConkey offers this floor that I really like, and there's no floor with guys like Franklin and Mitchell. It's down in the dirt, that floor is.
Yeah, I mean, Mitchell, it makes sense. Go ahead.
I was just going to say, if Mitchell is the Buffalo pick, do you feel good about him at 5 overall in a single quarterback or 8 overall in a super flex?
I think I'm still not taking until like 10, 8, like 9 or 10. I still want Worthy and Thomas over him for sure.
It seems that way to me. And, you know, all these mock drafts I look at, I'm looking at all these running backs that are getting nice landing spots. And I know we see that every single year, Ryan. But I see these nice landing spots and I say, these are the guys that are going to jump up our ADP and potentially overtake some of these wide receivers. If Mitchell ends up in Buffalo, that's going to be pretty enticing. But not as enticing as if Ladd McConkey lands with the Chiefs at 32, or if Jalen Wright goes in the second round to one of these needy running back teams. Same to be said with Jonathan Brooks or even Trey Benson. So I think there's a lot to be gained with that running back class, and maybe these wide receivers are the ones that could get bumped down. We got enough. Is that enough on Mitchell? Should we move on?
Yeah, I think so.
Yep. Yeah, let's get to Xavier Leggett, wide receiver from South Carolina, currently 20th overall in our rookie rankings at wide receiver 10, man.
He's not normally my kind of player, but I really love Xavier Legette. He is a size, speed, strength freak. 4.39 at 6'1", 223. It's a 98th percentile weight adjusted speed score, 95th percentile burst score. He's just so dangerous in the open field. And in the NFL, they can just put him out on the outside and let him run verts and curls and comebacks. And I think he would be completely fine. He can shift that cushion between him and the corners on comebacks and then just decelerate on, like, I wouldn't say it's on a dime, but for somebody of his size, like, it's impressive how fast he can throttle down. He's got that massive catch radius. He's comfortable making plays in traffic and through contact at the sideline. And he already knows how to make a difficult catch on the sideline, whether it's skying up far above the defender, whether it's laying out and still getting both of those feet in bounds. He has the body control and spatial awareness to do that when he's fully extended to catch the ball. I just think there are catches that he makes that are uncoverable at the collegiate level anyway. And then on top of that, he can take a short slant and turn that into a 70-yard touchdown with his speed. So he's got an incredible efficiency numbers, and the highest in the class against man coverage, 3.96 yards per route run in the SEC. He's got a 73% catch rate in the SEC, 3.05 yards per team pass attempt in the SEC. So there's a glaring black spot on his profile, Dan, but from what we've seen from just the 2023 season, like, I really like Xavier Legette. I'm probably going to take him higher than I should.
Do you feel like he's not as fast watching him on film or in pads as what his 40 time showed?
It's that long stride, man. It's deceptive. Like, it's got the deceptive speed, I think, is what it is. You know, like,
I'm surprised you like him as much. He, you know, for, you're right. For a guy his size, I think he's 6'1", 220.
223.
He makes plays that you want to see him make, for sure. He uses his size like a big receiver, and he uses his mass to box out defenders and make plays above the rim, all those kinds of things. He seems like that prototypical X receiver that plays outside, can win on the slant, can win on the downfield fade. But I'm shocked that he ran sub 4.4. He really felt like a 4.59 type guy the way when I watched him. And I don't think that's a good thing. I think he looked good in shorts and spandex when he ran a 40, and that kind of makes me feel like he's going to get overdrafted. I'm really surprised that you like him so much. The things I liked added on to what you mentioned. I liked what you said about his use on the boundary, the slant, and then to make plays after with the catch. He uses his frame well. I mentioned that. And then his timing to make plays. I think it was against Duke, if I remember right. A skinny post up the seam where he switched positions with the slot receiver post snap, and the two defenders switched man coverage on the play. He gained some leverage, made a play up high throw, and got smoked on the hit. That was a beautiful NFL type catch. So he reminds me a little bit of how I felt about Dontavian Wicks last year. So maybe I've come around a long ways on Wicks, and part of that is because he's a Packer and I watched him a lot. I'm a little bit uneasy about my feelings about Legette. I really do feel like there are some very good things about his game and some things that I think could be seen as raw and maybe he gets better at. I don't necessarily see him as a good route runner and a guy that can create a lot of separation at the top of his route, though, man.
Not even on those curls and comebacks. Like, I just see him.
The
like,
comeback is his best route, right?
I think the comeback, avert, and the slant. Like, if he can, I think he can live with those three. At the next level. One other thing, Dan, I forgot on the pauses before I talk about the negatives. We talked about last week the new kickoff return rules.
Yeah,
he averaged 26 yards per kick return.
Yeah, that's pretty good. I guess I didn't even realize that. You know, he's a big yards per route run guy. He's a big, yep. You know, he doesn't drop the ball. Those things all matter. Those are positives. But the negatives are glaring enough for me to push him down. I have him at wide receiver 12, so a couple spots below, and then 23 overall in my rankings right now, a few spots below consensus and ADP. Where do you have him now, Matt?
I haven't actually slotted him into my rankings yet, but I think he's probably going to end up at like wide receiver 8 or 9.
Man, we're just on the opposite ends of everything.
We really are today. So the obvious red flag with him is, how do you do nothing for 4 years? I mean, literally nothing. 42 combined catches his first 4 seasons. 3 of those, he had less than 10 receptions. And then all of a sudden in his fifth year, he busts out with 71, 12, 55, and 7. In his fifth year, third most receptions in the SEC this year. And then I did a little bit of digging. I don't know. I mean, I have no idea how this could possibly play on a young man's mind, but he did lose both of his parents. I think his mom was before he started playing football, but his dad was afterwards. So maybe that had some weighing on his life there. So that's really the biggest part, Dan, is how do you do nothing for 4 years? If we want to talk about on the field stuff, you know, there's not a lot of stuff in the middle of the field. Like I watched, I think 5 games, and almost everything is either deep or short manufactured touches near the line of scrimmage, which, you know, he does, that does give him some backfield versatility as well. We saw him get some carries. So the stuff in the middle of field, that one's weird. I don't know if you have an insight on that, but otherwise, like, man, like other than the not doing anything for 4 years, like I just really like what he did in 2023, I guess.
Well, the insight on that is that he's not strong at the top of his route. He's not going to run a 20 yard dig and create separation so they didn't even ask him to do it. They asked him to do what you just mentioned, those quick hitches and bubble screens, or go down the field and make a play after the catch. So, you know, I look at these mock drafts, Ryan, and I see him, slotted in the second round, typically, one of them second round receivers, sometimes late in the second. Seems like he's going to be a day two guy, but Matt mentioned it, 23-year-old, late breakout. Dynasty managers don't get excited about these type of prospects very often, and that's probably why his ADP lands in the latter part of round two.
Yeah, definitely could be one of those types of players that NFL teams are more excited about than dynasty managers for some of those reasons. Looking at some of the rankings, you mentioned we have him as wide receiver 10 in our rankings. He's also wide receiver 10 in both sets of our rookie ADP, single quarterback and super flex. Mock Draft Database has him as the wide receiver 12, 58 overall. PFF wide receiver 13, 63 overall. So that all suggests he is likely a second rounder. I mentioned the Matt Miller mock over at ESPN from a week or two ago. He actually had him as the 33rd overall player to Carolina. So first pick of the second round. And you do occasionally see him.
Feels like a Panther.
Yeah, you do occasionally see him mocked late in the first round. So I think he's definitely going in the second round, I think, based on everything we're seeing. And, you know, his dynasty ADP is probably going to stay in that second round range as well, although obviously a good landing spot could bump him up to the early part of the second round.
Yeah, I don't see it. I'm not going to do that. Even if he does get that early day two draft capital, even if it were with a good quarterback or a team that trades up for him, I always value that a little bit as well. I can't see myself going in on Xavier Legette.
What if he's the Bill or the Chief in the late first?
That would be shocking to me. I can't even let my brain go there, because I think NFL teams are making a mistake picking him in the second round. Honestly, I don't see it.
Ryan, did you
get on board?
Ryan, did you get an interview session with Legette?
No, I mean, I can check my notes, but nothing stands out as far as.
I was just curious because I was very shocked at this has been out there, I'm sure, but I was very shocked at any interview that I listened to, and that strong Southern drawl that he has. I was not expecting that accent to come out of that man.
When you asked me, I pulled up my notes and I wrote, sounds like an old Southern preacher. So that's how he came across. I mean, he was up on that podium, really, you know, really preaching to the media.
That makes me love him even more. All right, yeah. Dan, let's talk about Jermaine Burton, huh?
Yeah, let's get to Jermaine Burton, the Alabama prospect, currently 39th overall, wide receiver 20. So down the board just a little bit. If you watch any of Jermaine Burton, you're going to see a physically dominant receiver, both at the line of scrimmage and at the catch point. He's really his strengths are with that fade route. He catches the back shoulder as good as any college receiver that you're going to see. He's great with timing and anticipation of making those plays. Good strong hands at the catch point. I just love how he tracks the ball down the field, whether he's in tight coverage or between the corner and the safety in a zone. He protects himself at the catch point. He's got some things that you're going to like. And I think particularly NFL quarterback will really like, because he saves errant throws. He makes some catches that you think that's an NFL catch, especially on that back shoulder fade route that he runs at Alabama, uses it so often. Jermaine Burton was the best one that they've had in the last couple of years at running that route and catching it. Every single time, it felt like to me. I like Burton's game. There's going to be some flaws here too as well, Matt. I have him ranked right around consensus, wide receiver 19. I think I have him at 38 overall, and we have him at 39 overall. Seems like one of the guys, though, that if you're fortunate enough to get him in the fourth round of your rookie draft, you're going to be thrilled with getting Jermaine Burton.
Yeah, absolutely. I think late third, fourth round, he's worth taking a shot at that point. I do think he's going to have issue finding any kind of volume in the NFL. He's just, to me, he's a vertical deep threat with size and straight line speed. He runs so strong through en route contact, like nobody is throwing him off his routes. I did write down that if you got an extra point for PPR for double and PPR for double catches, Burton would be a cheat code, because even in his highlight plays, like you see him double catch the ball in the end zone. I would say he has strong hands, like you said, Dan. Like, he definitely can rip the ball out of the air. I don't think he necessarily has soft hands. They kind of bobble off of there a little bit. And then, like, he's not going to be a yak threat at all. And, like, some of his routes, especially the outbreaking routes, they're about as sharp as a circle. You know, like, that is not there. What he does well could translate to the NFL. I just don't see high enough volume for him to really be a huge impact for fantasy.
Yeah, he's going to have to be that double-digit touchdown guy, that guy that makes big plays and can score for you that way, because he has no ability after the catch to make big plays, really, and he doesn't have the ability to move inside and catch 100 passes. He doesn't have the ability to create enough separation regularly enough to be an 80 catch receiver or anything on the outside. He looks to me like a number three wide receiver for an NFL team, which could turn into good spurts to his career. He could be productive here and there. I don't know if we'll ever be starting Jermaine Burton every single week. He is more athletic than you expect. His RAS score is nice, a 4.45 40, which is good for a guy that is 6 foot, 200 pounds, and the vertical jump at 38 and a half inches, a quality number for him as well. I saw an interview that Nick Saban did talking about Jermaine Burton and talked about how coachable he is and how he became such a leader, and that despite all the big names that went through Alabama, particularly at that position, he would find ways to stand out among those big names and that group of receivers. And you know, no head coach in college is going to talk down about a prospect, but I thought those were some unique words to say about Jermaine Burton, some things that I saw. Ryan, when you look at that, where we expect him to go in the draft, what kind of draft capital, landing spot, Jermaine Burton isn't going to be one of the first names we hear called at the wide receiver position. We may be waiting a while, but landing spot is going to matter.
Yeah, absolutely. Looks like based on, you know, anything you want to look at, really, ADP rankings, mock draft database, everybody has him in that, let's say, 16 to 20 range as far as the wide receivers. PFF a little bit higher on him. He's a player they like. He's going to be a day two pick probably a late day two pick, I think. And, you know, he's just kind of a reminder that even if you're just the wide receiver 16 or 17 in this class, that just goes to show you how deep the class really is. You know, this guy might be potentially a top 10 wide receiver in a typical class.
Let's move on to the final prospect we need to talk about. That's tight end Theo Johnson from Penn State, a guy I watched quite a bit. Really, really had a surprising combine. 4.57 40-yard dash, big time vertical at 39.5. That athleticism score is through the roof. Really looks like a specimen when you see him running in shorts. The production, though, Matt, doesn't quite match when it comes to Theo Johnson, who is a five-star recruit and a guy that Penn State really, really went after hard. He's got the look of a athletic pass-catching tight end. I don't think he's ever shown it with enough regularity to feel any better than ranking him at 52nd overall, which is where he is in our consensus ranking at tight end 6.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's going to move up. I think he might be the third tight end off the board when it's all said and done, just based on that athleticism score. You mentioned it, the RAS score, 9.99. I saw it was actually a perfect 10.0 before his agility numbers came in. That dropped him a 0.01 points to 9.99. But like you said, production-wise, only 34 receptions this year, only 20 the previous season. The difference, I think, between him and other high RAS guys like Gesicki and even Zach Kuntz last year is that he is such a good blocker, so he's going to be on the field. There's a play against, I think it's in the Rose Bowl against Utah, where he sprung an 80-yard touchdown, 80-yard rushing touchdown with one of these pancake blocks. But as a receiver, you know, he does have kind of ugly drops at kinds. The hands aren't the best, but then you see on the next play, you see him sky and just rip a ball out of the air. So he's a fun prospect. And if we're still hanging on to that athleticism is the best predictor of tight end talent at the NFL level, then, I mean, I might take a shot on him in the third, fourth round. I think it's probably fine, especially if you're hunting for tight end and don't want to spend up for that second tier after Brock Bowers, of course.
Yeah. I don't know. I didn't see a lot of the stuff you just mentioned. The one thing I wrote down for a positive is if you turn on the highlight reel, you're going to see some contested catches, plays down the field, which is exciting. There are a lot. If you watch entire games, though, he just disappears. His inability to get open against zone coverage. It's like he doesn't have the trait to find that opening and sit down inside of it. That doesn't exist for him. I did not see the blocking that you mentioned there. In fact, I tried to look that up to see if there was anything to add there. And I saw the opposite. He gives up on blocks far too often, like uninterested in making blocks down the field. He's set up for like second level blocks on linebackers and safeties. And he looks back to see if the running back made it through before engaging in the block, which is a big red flag for me. I wouldn't draft him in a four round draft. I don't have him in my top 50 rankings. Ryan, do you see what Matt sees here that maybe he could climb up as we enter the post draft cycle?
I mean, we do this every year with Penn State guys, right? I mean, Gesicki's the one we all remember from a fantasy dynasty standpoint, but I mean, they always have the workout warriors that don't seem to work out in the NFL. So
nicely done.
I'm probably going to be avoiding Theo Johnson in general, but yeah, I mean, if it's the fourth round, then I don't know. I'd probably rather have Burton if he's in that range. Actually, I'd definitely rather have Burton probably several other guys. So I'm with you that I'll be avoiding him. You know, maybe he sneaks into the end of day two, but more likely a day three player. And, you know, if you're not tight end, if you're not a top two tight end, maybe top three tight end in this class, we probably don't care. And I don't think he will be.
Yeah, I'm not counting on it either. The tight end class is top heavy, of course, with Brock Bowers. Jatavion Sanders took a hit in Indianapolis. Ben Sinnott is when he's considered to be the third guy by some, that's not a good sign for the tight end class for sure. So I could see why maybe Theo Johnson gets bumped up by some dynasty rankers. Four more rookies again next week. Looking forward to getting to those. As we said, only a few weeks left until the NFL draft. We'll be here for all of it. For Ryan and Matt, I'm Dan. Thanks for listening to this episode of the DLF Dynasty Podcast. We'll catch you again next week.
Thank you for listening to the DLF Dynasty Podcast. Please remember to rate and review and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.